Hello and welcome to another episode of The Grey NATO. It's a loose discussion of travel, adventure, diving, driving gear, and most certainly watches. This is episode 361, and it's proudly brought to you by the always growing TGN supporter crew. We thank you all so much for your continued support, and if you're listening and would like to consider supporting the show, please visit thegreynato.com for more details. My name is James Stacey, and I'm joined as ever by my pal and co-host, Jason Heaton. Jason, how are we doing?
I'm kind of cold, actually. It's been really, really cold here. I was out walking Ruby this morning, and it's, you know, Fahrenheit minus something. And we're in the depths of winter, and I guess it's only supposed to get colder. So yeah, but holding my own here. Last week when you asked me this question, we kind of got into some things that stirred things up a bit on the Slack, and I'm not going to apologize for it, but I also feel like, you know, we dropped a bit of a bombshell on our poor moderators who had
apologies to the moderators, our incredible moderators,
and just thanks to everybody, or you know, most of you for keeping things civil and kind of tolerant with all of that happened last week. And I appreciate all the kind of private and public comments that people made to me in the meantime. So that's great. So we appreciate that. How are you doing up there in Canada? It sounds like it's cold there too. And you sent me a photo. You got dumped with snow.
Dude, we've been hit with a bunch of snow in Toronto. And don't get me wrong, I think there's actually places a little bit further out that got more. So my condolences, of course. But it was one of those days like that. There was one day, thankfully, it was like relatively light snow. Yeah. In terms of its weight, it was very airy, powdery sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. But I shoveled three or four. Like, I spent 2 hours of my workday shoveling just to keep up with it.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's cold. I don't have a Ruby to walk. I took the garbage out this morning and was just very disappointed in how cold it was. You know, I think this has become almost a trite cliche for the show, but this is that time of year where you just, I'm already thinking about the cottage. I'm going, well, maybe it'll be in early spring. Yeah. Maybe it'll be, you know, maybe by the time I get back from Watches and Wonders that weekend or that sort of thing, we'll be ready to roll to start enjoying a little bit of the warmer weather. But I'm just, you know, I'm not built that well for the winter. I should make a better effort to like go out and enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I find, you know, I start work, you know, 6:30 in the morning. And by the time I'm done and finish dinner, it's 8:30. Yeah. And I just like, it's one thing to be out in the cold when it's nice and sunny. That's quite enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Maybe you go for a little walk or throw some skis on or snowshoes or whatever. I'm not that far from a spot called Jefferson Forest.
Yeah.
But unless I, you know, took part of the day off or something, I'm just not sure it would work out currently.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. It's been cold here. So I've been inside reading a lot of books. I finished Nuclear War. Mm-hmm. We had a couple of really good chats on, that's Annie Jacobson's Nuclear War, a scenario. We had a couple of good chats about that on the Slack, so check that out if you're keen. Really enjoyed it. I mean, as much as you can enjoy a book about, you know, kind of the end of the world. I think you grow up, or at least I grew up, you know, understanding the concept of mutually assured destruction, and that this paints a much more complete picture, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I moved right on to The Getaway, which I'm looking forward to reading. That's Anthony Jeselnik's book of the month for January of this year.
Yeah.
So that one should be good. Doesn't look like it'll take me too long to get through it. And then Sarah and I have been watching season 2 of The Night Manager. Have you gotten into that at all?
I haven't. Yeah, I forgot about that. No, I've got to get into that. It's been how many years? It's been, is it 10? Oh, 10 years?
Plenty.
5 years?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure.
It's a long time since the last season, yeah.
But we're partway in, 3 episodes in, something like that. I'm enjoying it. I haven't quite gotten to the point where I like it to the same extent as the first season. And you can kind of feel, if you're sensitive to these things, you can kind of feel where maybe the budget's a little bit less this season.
Yeah.
There's some camera moves, there's some special effects, that sort of thing that aren't quite what we got used to in that first season. But despite that, I am really happy to have it back. I'm happy to have more Jonathan Pine in my life. And I like the sort of setting. I don't want to give anything away. That would be a bummer. But the setting is it's a different part of the world than the first season.
Yeah.
And I'm enjoying it. It's been pretty good.
Yeah, I can't wait. Yeah, that sounds like a good way to spend a cold few nights. On my end, this is switching gears, I guess literally and figuratively. I was driving last week, I guess it was, in the Defender, and stepped on the brakes and the pedal went right to the floor and barely was able to kind of coast to a stop. Had to hit a few pumps to kind of get the pressure back up and get some bite on the brakes. And so I brought it over to kind of my kind of eccentric, quirky, creative mechanic who's not too far from here and barely made it there without rear-ending a few people. And turns out it had a snapped brake line and was kind of losing fluid.
Sabotage.
And yeah, exactly right. Somebody sawed through the brake line. No, a caliper bolt had gone missing and the caliper came loose and snapped the brake line. And so it was only running on rear brakes, on rear drums, you know, for this big heavy vehicle. And because it's kind of a dual circuit system. And so it's in the shop. I ordered a bunch of parts. And, you know, rather than just kind of fix that one thing, my mechanic, Tony, suggested that we just redo all the brakes. So it's getting, you know, all four corners, new everything, basically. New drums in the back, new calipers, new brake hoses, new master cylinder. So it won't be cheap, but it's been due for it. The brakes have never been terribly good on that vehicle. So I'm actually, you know, car repairs are something that I think a lot of people kind of fear and gnash their teeth over and whatever. But for me, I don't have to do it often. I kind of do my own maintenance on the Defender and a few fixes. I put a new alternator in this past summer, et cetera. But, you know, big stuff like this, it's almost like Christmas. I almost get excited to get it back because I think in this case, it'll be such a noticeable difference that I kind of can't wait to get it back later this week. So anyway, that's the news on the vehicle front here.
Well, that can be a pain when those sorts of things happen. I'm glad that it didn't happen where you're going down, you know, the steepest hill in your area.
Oh my God.
Or something like that. Yeah. Or, you know, I've had people who, you know, park and you know, believe their vehicle to be ready to not roll away and that sort of scenario, which is great.
Yeah.
For comedic effect, terrible in real life, of course. Yeah. But yeah, I'm glad that'll get sorted out. And mechanically speaking, not an insane thing to get fixed, which is nice.
Right, right.
All right. I think, do we have any sort of house news or anything like that to get into before we jump into some wrist check?
Well, just a little bit. I'll just mention that, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I mentioned that we had run out of 20 millimeter straps. So for that to be a choice for new annual subscribers to choose for their supporter kit, we only have 22s in stock currently, but our supplier obliged with a very quick turnaround and they are en route and should be here, I think probably by the time this episode goes live, maybe later in the week. They're coming from overseas, of course, so could be early next week. But if you're an annual subscriber and waiting to order a 20 millimeter strap for your supporter kit, they will be back in stock soon. So just thought I'd mention that. Thanks for your patience.
Oh, and the other thing I noticed that we've had a couple people mention in the Slack, and I think I saw an email, some of the products in the Printful shop, so some of the merch items that we have kind of come in and out of availability, and we don't seem to get any notice from Printful about that. So it's regional. Mm-hmm. I think the example that I've seen a couple is folks that were waiting on the green stealth hat.
Oh, yeah.
And they were wondering why it hadn't come in. And when you went and checked, it was no longer available, but no one, they didn't get an email. We didn't get an email.
Yeah.
So I would say if you ordered something and it's taken too long, you're not getting an update, please send us a quick email with an order number would be great.
Yeah.
Just for expediency. Yeah. We're kind of learning that occasionally things kind of come in and out of availability. And there's not necessarily an email sent to say, oh, by the way, you have these six orders that are now not going to happen or won't for a while.
Yeah.
And and then we feel bad because obviously people are waiting for a hat. And some of these, I think, were placed with the hopes of getting them for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
So our most sincere apology, of course, on that front. But if you get into a scenario, don't think that patience is necessary. Like, obviously, give it enough time to show up. But if you're past that event horizon, please let us know.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, our apologies for that. Printful has been great for the most part. It's been a really good system for us. And they are very responsive when I write with issues. I mean, they get back to me within a day and resolve things, you know, almost 100% of the time to our satisfaction. And I'm really appreciative of that. But the one area that they do fall down on is that those sorts of communications. And we did have a case recently, too, where somebody ordered a cap and they were expecting the one that, as you would, as advertised, but it came with a slightly different, it had like a distressed bill and a different closure in the back, and you know, just was wrong. And I wrote to Printful and they apologized and said they'll send out the correction soon. So yeah, as James said, if you have any issues or you're waiting for something or something isn't quite right, let us know. With the caveat that we cannot do returns or exchanges on just different sizes. So be sure to make sure you're ordering the right size, because these are printed to order order them. So we can't oblige that necessarily, but I think if there's any errors or delays, do let us know.
For sure. All right. How about a little bit of risk check? Weirdly, I think we were on a similar wavelength. I promise we didn't plan this.
Yeah. So, big surprise. I've started to think that maybe my wrist check shouldn't be so much the watch. It should be the strap, because I'm kind of just rotating between the CWN1 and the Pelagos FXD. And today it's the FXD, but I put it on to, lately I've been understrapping. I don't know who coined that term, but it's, I'm wearing a 20mm strap and it's 22mm lug width on this. And on this watch, it looks good. It looks good. I normally don't like that look, to see like a little spring bar pin kind of peeking from behind. But with this watch, I think it actually looks pretty cool. And I've got it on a 20mm, I don't remember what they called it, but the triple aught design titanium hardware NATO, with this really great webbing in olive drab. And it's it just looks perfect. It looks the part.
Oh, so. You have the that's the Quantum?
The Quantum, yeah, yeah.
You have that in green, eh?
Yeah, yeah.
Bet you that's good.
It's really good, yeah. It's nice. It fits the watch really well. So
yeah, well, I've got on something similar. I'm wearing my Pelagos 39 this week. I've had it on for a couple of days. I'm going to wear it through the week, like I said earlier in the year, trying to not kind of just frantically switch between watches, but like you, I'm kind of moving around between straps.
Mm-hmm.
I have really come to prefer the Pelagos 39 on its bracelet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I have one complication with that as part of my lifestyle, which is the bracelet is a bit sharp.
Oh.
The clasp.
Yeah.
And I'm constantly picking up my son, who's not old enough necessarily to sit up. So my wrist is sliding behind his head.
Yeah.
And I just worry that I'll scratch him with it. So I've been wearing it on straps. I have the Postal canvas, which I really, really love, especially this time of year, because it doesn't have to get sweaty and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then yesterday I just put it on a 20 mil NATO. So it's understrapped by a millimeter.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really notice it unless I go to look for it. I don't have a 21 mil NATO, and I prefer, of course, our NATO.
Yeah.
The more cottony, less sort of plastic shiny,
mm-hmm,
sort of take on it. I know that somewhere I have an Erica's in 21 millimeter that I ordered for this watch. And unless I accidentally gave it away, I can't find it. And I'm not typically one to lose stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I have like a picture in my mind of where the thing is.
Yeah.
And I go find it. And twice I've been like, oh, maybe it's in that drawer. And I went to check. It's not there. I did a full lap of the office. So if you happen to have been, whether maybe I sold a watch and I left it on it, or I gave it away at the most recent New Hope hangout at Triumph Brewing, if you've got a 21 millimeter Erica's, please make sure you're using it, because I'm gonna have to order a second one. I like that infinite adjustability, like where you're not using holes and pins.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is a watch that I don't commonly wear on a NATO, probably because of the sizing, but I absolutely adore it. This is so comfortable and so easy and so legible, and the bezel is great. Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
What more is there to say? It's just talk about cliche for the show at this point.
Yeah.
Very, very happy with this one. Have a cool trip with Tudor in February that I'm looking forward to. And I've been watching some of the stuff that they did with Dakar, which is a trip that I wasn't able to make work, just because you had to leave very early January and then spend a couple days kind of waiting for paperwork in the Middle East before we could move on to where Dakar staged.
Mm-hmm.
And I just had too much family stuff going on. It was right those first couple days of this new year. But yeah, it looks like they had a great time. Zach Pina was there. They had a couple of guys from Speed out, including James Pumphrey. So looking forward to seeing what kind of content pops out from that. But yeah, I've been wearing this a ton. And weirdly, I can't really get it out of my head. But I keep thinking about the Ranger in 36.
I know.
It's very weird for me to care.
Yeah, I think about that a lot.
36 millimeter field watch. You know what I mean? And yeah, other than that, we're 20 days into dry January. So I am still dry, but I have bought a watch. I'm not going to say what it is just yet, because I don't have it yet. I should have it early February. And we can let the crowd, we can let the greater TGN contingent decide if it qualifies as a broken
broken promise.
a broken in and out, a broken yeah. promise, you know, to not to buy watches and then not to buy watches that are similar to watches I already have or have had, or not to rebuy watches. I kind of broke all those rules in one. But I am really excited for this watch. I sent you some pictures this morning. Mm. It's just happened in the last couple hours.
Yeah.
I'm pretty pumped, but I should get it, or sometime like early February. So we'll figure that out and chat about it. But hey, how about we get into kind of one of the bigger, more popular episodes of the year. One of the few examples of us totally abandoning the TGN superlatives for a film club.
Yeah,
we haven't done a film club in a little while. The last one we did was with our good buddy Tom Place last April. Mm-hmm. I have been thinking more about the film club because I think there are a lot of great movies. And then looking at today's list, there's a lot of movies that we just, you know, we're 13 volumes in.
Yeah.
I think we've done now 119 before we add 10 on. We're at 119 in the list.
Wow, that's wild.
And I think there's a lot that we haven't gotten to. So I think we could do more than one a year, but I think the other one needs to have a guest.
Yeah, good idea.
So I think let's do one in the summer with a really great guest.
Mm-hmm.
And like we got very lucky with Tom. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And I think it would be fun. So I think you can expect us to try and do two of these a year. This one is just we'll call it the Hostful, if you're an old school podcast fan. And beyond that, yeah, I think we've got each five to pick. And if you ever need to know what's already on the list, don't skip out on Kyle Martin's Letterboxd for the full TGN Film Club. We can put that in the show notes as always, but a big shout out to Kyle for always helping us with that. And yeah, I don't know, when you haven't done one since April, Substack tells us we have a lot of new listeners. I guess we need some sort of explanation. These are not movies that we think are the greatest movies of all time or movies that we contend that everybody will like. They're movies that we really like and enjoy watching. About that easy?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'm rambling. So how about you, you jump in with your first?
Sure. Yeah. I'm trying to think how to order these. And I guess I'm just going to jump in with the way I've got them here. This is one that was such an oversight of mine because I'd heard so much about it for so many years and I hadn't watched it until 2 months ago for the first time.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's called This Is Spinal Tap. I'm sure everybody knows this one. Hopefully most people have seen this, and if not, you're in for a treat. Directed by and partially starring the late, great Rob Reiner. Rest in peace. It's funny, as I'm looking at my list, I've got two faux documentaries on my list here. One of my favorite genres of show or movies are like this behind the music or, you know, rockumentaries, kind of a, you know, documentary about a rock band, whether they're on tour or, you know, just about their background. And this is that. It's a made up band called Spinal Tap, which is,
yeah, we got to get good. Let's read the log line or the tagline or something.
Yeah, I mean, all it says here on IMDb is Spinal Tap, one of England's loudest bands, is chronicled by film director Marty DeBurgi on what proves to be a fateful tour. I mean, it's fantastic. And it was made in 1984. So this is kind of classic era. This is actually the era, I would say, you know, this was the rise of MTV and kind of that time when a lot of these kind of real documentaries about rock bands were being made anyway. And I just love the kind of earnestness and seriousness that is kind of portrayed here, you know, the mm-hmm. kind of the angst and the personal disputes and the kind of behind the scenes turmoil and all of that that goes with this movie. And you know, you're just kind of chuckling through the whole thing, and it's really a fantastic film.
I mean, yeah. And for people who are listening and who haven't seen this, and I'll be fair, I haven't seen this movie in 20 years,
mm-hmm, yeah,
but maybe more like 25. It was around the time I was getting into guitar. And it's super funny. It's really well written. And if you ever hear the like turn it up to 11 sort of yeah. meme, that's where that came from. This.
Yeah.
Marty is interviewing one of the guys and he says all the numbers go up to 11. And he goes, oh, most amps only go up to 10. He goes, yeah. He goes, does that make it louder? Is it any louder? He goes, well, it's one louder, isn't it? It's not 10. I love it. It's an exceptional film. It's very silly, but it does a good job of capturing rock documentaries in a way that's like, it pays respect to them, but at the same time, it's picking at all of the silliness. of focusing on people. It, for me, is and I remember watching it several. And the more you kind of watch it, the more you realize it's like a little bit of a commentary on like, eh, you know, some people are just good at the one thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like maybe being on stage, being a rock star, and then you have nothing to say necessarily off stage. it always kind of felt like a bit of a subtext to that one. But yeah, this is great. This is the Spinal Tap is fantastic and excellent, Rob Reiner.
Yeah, and I just think that just moving through life these days, or at any point since 1984, you're always hearing references to this movie. It's just kind of become part of our culture. As sort of almost like a code word, you know, for a number of things. And I was, like I said, I was almost embarrassed that I hadn't seen this movie because I'd always heard it referred to so often. And so when I finally saw it, I kind of got it. So yeah, definitely. If you haven't seen this movie, don't waste any time. Check it out.
For sure. Yeah, good pick to kick it off. Three of my five for today are ones I'm embarrassed weren't already in our list. And I'm going to start with a movie that I absolutely adore. I've seen it many, many times. And then I think I watch it. And then for the next 18 months, it kind of leaves my mind. Because I've seen this movie probably 10 times. And it always feels new to me when I watch it.
Hmm.
And it's from 1998. It's John Dahl's Rounders.
Hmm.
And it's Matt Damon, Edward Norton, Gretchen Mol, John Malkovich. You have John Turturro. It's an incredible cast, an amazing cast about Matt Damon. The tagline is a law student and his pal gamble for high stakes. That's so undersold. but Matt Damon plays sort of a clean cut law student. And he has a rough and tumble buddy played by Ed Norton who goes by Worm. And it's about them getting into all sorts of poker related mischief and crime and problems.
Wow.
1998, this is one of the movies that kicked off the craze for Texas Hold'em. I think it created a huge block of people who wanted to either be Worm or Mike McDermott, or maybe wanted to vacillate between the two. You know, for me, when this movie came out, I was only 12, so I didn't get to it for another decade. But of course, by the time I got into it and was into university, maybe not a decade, maybe it was 7-8 years later, I was in university, you know, Texas Hold'em was all people played. And I'm not saying it's because of this movie, but the movie is well timed to be part of that sort of world.
Yeah.
And it's a great movie. It's a really good movie. John Turturro's, I mean, find me a bad performance from John Turturro. I don't think you can.
Yeah.
But this is a fantastic movie.
I've never seen this movie, and it's great. I love a good gambling film.
Oh, I think you'll love this. John Malkovich is swinging for the fences. I have no clue where his accent's actually from, like where he figured that out. But yeah, Rounders is an absolute winner. I'm a big fan of this one.
All right. Well, good one. All right. I'm just going to keep moving forward here chronologically. Since I started way back in 1984, now I'm going to move up to 2006 with two movies, the first of which is yet another, I don't know how you'd call this, a social commentary, sarcastic humor film, whatever you want to call it. It's Idiocracy from 2006. And it's a movie that I had heard a lot about for many people over the years and had only just watched it for the first time a couple of months ago. And boy, it's hilarious. It's scary. And it's just, it's got a lot going for it. I'll read the summary here. Corporal Joe Bowers, a decidedly average American, is selected for a top secret hibernation program, but is forgotten and left to awaken to a future so incredibly moronic that he's easily the most intelligent person alive. Good cast. Luke Wilson plays Corporal Joe Bowers. And it's just, it's spooky how much of this kind of stuff you watch and you sort of cringe and say, are we there yet? Is this where we're headed? It's quite the social commentary, and it was directed and co-written by Mike Judge. James, I know you're a fan of his and familiar with some of his movies. I have not seen Office Space, which I guess was his other more well-known film. But
You got to see Office Space.
Yeah, I'll need to see Office Space for sure. Now that I've seen this, I really like what he's done. But it's crazy. I mean, Terry Crews plays the president, who happens to be a former WWF wrestler. You know, there's just some kind of great faces and names that you'll kind of recognize, you know, currently and looking back 20 years now, they kind of pop up in here. You know, Dax Shepard is in this, Maya Rudolph. And yeah, it's a movie I think that has, unlike, you know, a lot of kind of old, you know, movies from a while back that kind of try to predict the future, somehow this one aged really well, and it seems strangely accurate in many ways, which is kind of spooky.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the Mike Judge thing, whether it's Idiocracy or Office Space or even, you know, Silicon Valley. He's got something that allows him to see a piece of the future, or maybe he's able to complete the puzzle in like a storyline in a comedic sort of fashion. But yeah, just I remember seeing Idiocracy right around the time it came out because of my love of Office Space, and Office Space remains, I think, a movie that's largely aged really well. It's still, I think, for the most part, very funny, which is remarkable given the era in which it came out. I remain a big Ron Livingston fan, and that sort of thing. And yeah, I think, you know, I love Luke Wilson. I love Terry Crews. I think this movie's great. It's a little terrifying. It's a little, you know, it's a little bit of the first few minutes of WALL-E, if you haven't seen that, by Pixar, one of the Pixar films, where you're like, is this how accurate is this kind of prediction of where we might be headed? And I think in 2006 it was comedy, and now there's elements of it that feel more like commentary.
Yeah.
On kind of realistic sort of, you know, grandstanding and social scenarios and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's a great one. I highly recommend it if you haven't seen it, and it's a great twofer with Office Space as well.
Yeah, good idea. All right, two down. What's your second one?
Yeah, two down. My second one, we're gonna go with another one that I just can't believe we didn't do yet. And like I've gone back. I'll do it once more live on tape. I'm gonna make sure this isn't on the list. Control F. M-I-S-S-I-O-N. All right, it's not there. Mission Impossible, 1996.
Wow, geez.
I could have sworn this was in the first three or four of our film clubs. It's one of my favorites. It's way up there in terms of early Tom Cruise for me. And I remain a massive Tom Cruise fan. I think he does a lovely job. I think that obviously they've now done so many of these films. There's like seven of them. I just watched through all of them recently with my daughters, who really enjoyed them. And the one for me that stands out in a stylistic fashion is the first one. It's much more, don't get me wrong, you have the stunt, you have the huge train ending, you have the very famous CIA break-in dropping down from the ceiling.
Yeah.
But for me, 1996, this was still a spy movie. At its core, it's a lot of like people coming together in rooms in, you know, far-flung locations to talk about the plan that they're going to do, or you know, maybe it's him lighting a match and a car pulling up and then talking to someone who he's pretending to be somebody else. There's some really great stuff in this movie. And I think what's remarkable is it's of the group. And I don't want to be unfair, because I think a lot of them have some great ability. And I really enjoyed Brad Bird with Ghost Protocol. I really love the Chris McQuarrie ones, the most recent three, especially Rogue Nation. Obviously, the second one was John Woo. So I don't want to say we're without other auteurs. John Woo has made some incredible movies in his era. But this is Brian De Palma.
Yeah.
This is a genre film, a deep genre film taken on by a really incredible, artful, dark, super capable sort of director. And I just really like the way this movie's treated. I love the way it's shot. I think the majority of the dialogue is excellent. I think that the third act twist hits really well, even years later. My daughters didn't see it coming. It's infinitely quotable. My daughters both like, you know, my team is dead. They're all dead. For me, you watch it and you go like, well, this became a template for the next Bonds.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the Brosnan Bonds, which of course that's a year earlier in 95. But I think we talked about this recently on a Q&A. The Daniel Craig Bonds owe something to this film.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Obviously they've taken the stunt idea and made essentially that's the whole movie now.
Mm-hmm.
It's like riding a motorcycle off a giant mountain and then parachuting onto a plane, or hanging onto the side of a bi-wing, or holding onto the side of like an AC-130, or whatever it is that Tom decides he's got to do, and God bless him for it.
Yeah,
he's a true movie star. He really is. And for me, this early one feels like the clay that so many movies started to use later on. The Bourne stuff, like the number of times where he's just like on the phone,
mm-hmm.
and that's how they move the they're tracing the number. When you do, you got to keep him on the line for 30
oh,
seconds,
yeah, right.
or whatever, and he's in the train station and slams the phone down. I think it's incredible. It's an incredible movie. It's aged really well. It's still super watchable. The technology sucks, mm-hmm. which I think is perfect. You know, you've got all this like weird custom tech that Luther has made for them. And, you know, I love all the characters. I think the actors that are in it are all really fantastic. Again, we're not sticking on top of this. So the tagline is an American agent under false suspicion of disloyalty must discover and expose the real spy without the help of his organization. That's kind of the storyline to every Mission Impossible. But yeah, Tom Cruise, John Voight, Emmanuel Barre, Jean Reno, Ving Rhames, Henry Cerny, who's been in so many of these Mission Impossibles now. I just absolutely adore him. Kristen Scott Thomas is in this. That's never a bad sign.
Yeah.
The cast is incredible. John Voight. It just keeps going and it makes these careful references and it's shot like a spy film, but it's an action film. I love it. I love this movie.
I hadn't realized it was 1996. I mean, that was, that's a long time ago now, but it's,
30 years and 6 sequels.
Yeah. 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 And I agree with you. I think this was the best.
Yeah. Look, I think the fourth one's incredible. It's a better action movie. There's a great plot line to the fourth one. And I think it's interesting because if you watch this in 1996, you wouldn't have gone like, well, there'll be a point in Tom Cruise's life where this is all he does.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. Like he was a huge star in 96 and he just keeps going. And now he's like, and he's just cranking out some of the most hardcore action films in existence. It's just, it's such a weird thing to see where these movies went.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with where they went, but I really love where they started.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good pick.
So yeah, that's it. Mission Impossible, the first one. A weird omission after so many of these film clubs.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay. Give me another one.
Yeah, 2006 again. This is a movie I watched for the second time 2 nights ago. So it's fresh in my mind and absolutely adore this movie, The Lives of Others. German film set in 1984 East Berlin.
The
description is, in 1984 East Berlin, an agent of the secret police conducting surveillance on a writer and his lover finds himself becoming increasingly absorbed by their lives. I hadn't actually remembered all the details of this one when I pulled it up the other day. But I had just remembered the impact that it had on me when I first saw it, probably back in 06. And, I have sort of an interest or a penchant for almost anything set during the Cold War. I find it such a fascinating period, before the wall came down and, the East German Stasi, the kind of surveillance state, just has this reputation and there's something sort of ominous about it. And the acting and the actors that they chose are great. I would almost say this is a perfect movie. It's just flawless. It's just the way it's filmed.
Oh, wow.
The setting, the acting, the script. It's just, it takes turns that you don't expect. There's just something about, you know, East Germany in the 80s that have this sort of grim gray sort of miasma over it all, and it's just superb. You know, it starts out with this sort of the arc of kind of the main character, this guy who's the kind of main agent who's surveilling this this intellectual, this writer. Just his kind of development through the film from someone very sinister to someone a little bit more sympathetic is just genius. And it was directed by Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck. The name is familiar. Again, German film, it's subtitled. So if, you know, just beware if it's a movie you want to watch while you're doing something else or eating or whatever, and you don't speak German, you know, just keep that in mind. You might want to pick something else for that time, but, it's a good one. I highly recommend checking this one out.
Okay. Yeah. I don't know this movie.
Have you seen this one? No.
Okay. No, I don't know it. I haven't seen it.
I think you'd love it.
I think I recognize the name, but I'll mm-hmm. have to queue it up and get to it this week. That's glowing praise from you.
Yeah, it's really, really good. Yeah.
All right, so for my third, We'll start going chronological now. As we went 98, 96, we're now going to go to 2001 with another one that I'm just blown away. We didn't put on a list at any point.
Yeah.
Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Steven Soderbergh's absolute classic. Danny Ocean, a gangster, rounds up a gang of associates to stage a sophisticated and elaborate casino heist, which involves robbing three Las Vegas casinos simultaneously during a popular boxing event. It's a pretty good tagline. I think that misses the majority of the charm. If you haven't, for whatever reason, seen this movie, I would say the most likely my putting it in today's episode is just a reminder to watch it again.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to assume most people have seen it. But if you haven't, let me just walk you through the cast. George Clooney, Brad Pitt, Julia Roberts, Bernie Mac. We have Elliot Gould, Casey Affleck, Scott Kahn, Andy Garcia, Matt Damon.
Yeah.
It's a huge cast. It's an exceptionally fun movie that just becomes eminently more watchable the more time and effort you spend to pay attention. The dialogue's excellent. I think it's aged quite nicely for a movie that's, 25 years old at this point. And I think that the sequels are all pretty good as well. Ocean's 12 is great. Could also be on a future film club. I was blown away when I, control F'd and found that we didn't have Ocean's 11 in a previous film club. This is a movie I really enjoy. Obviously, I love a heist film. This is a different sort of heist film in that it doesn't really end up in a shootout. There's not a bunch of bullets, being cast down, the main street of Las Vegas. It's a little bit more relaxed. It's kind of shot and feels a bit like something from the Rat Pack in the 60s, which I think is what they're kind of going for. Clooney's great. The dialogue's really fun. The cast is absolutely incredible. And I think that it's one of those movies where they really were purposeful in the sequels to continue character development. So people who you might appreciate in the first film just kind of carry on from there. And like I said, I love a heist film. These ones are really fun. And if there's a world in which somebody listening hasn't seen this, I'm really happy for you because it's an absolute blast.
Yeah, it feels like, for one thing, it shocks me that it was a quarter of a century ago that this one came out. But one thing is, it felt like this was one of those movies that, before this one, movies were largely carried by one or two big actors. It was like, oh, this one's starring George Clooney, or this one's a Brad Pitt film, or, two big actors or whatever. It felt like this one sort of became that movie that when you see it and you're like, how did they assemble this cast? That is a lot of big names. Like, and then it feels like we're getting more of those. Or since this movie, we've just had a lot of these kind of ensemble big name casts. It kind of feels like Ocean's 11 was kind of in the vanguard of that type of movie. I'm sure there were some before this, but I just remember like seeing this movie and being like, how did they assemble these people? How did they pay their incredible salaries for a Brad Pitt and an Andy Garcia and a George Clooney and a Matt Damon? Crazy. Yeah.
I mean, like Matt Damon might have been cheap at
the time, right.
Comparatively, I mean? There's other movies that he's made that you could easily say all the same things about. If you haven't seen Logan Lucky, awesome. That's an absolute winner. Not everything is necessarily the same tone. Obviously, he did The Informant, he did Contagion, and he's done some sort of heavier films throughout that. And of course, we spoke at length last year about Black Bag, which is great. Same director, also a great cast. But just this feels like one of those moments where everything kind of comes together and they have this amazing cast. And now I think so many of these people kind of were able to play off of the success of this film and 12 after it, moving forward. I mean, even if you go backwards in Soderbergh, Out of Sight is incredible, has aged amazingly. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Peak Clooney for me. Maybe the only time I'm okay with a Jennifer Lopez in a movie. She's never my favorite. She's amazing and Out of Sight.
Yeah.
These are great ones, but you can kind of see in the movies before Ocean's 11, and then you get an Aaron Brockovich, which of course has Julia Roberts, and you kind of see him like putting the chess pieces together to be able to make something like this movie, which kind of stands on its own for quite a long time. So yeah, it's a fave of mine for sure. Another one of those ones I'm just, we talked Mission Impossible. Another one I'm pumped to show to my daughters. I think they'll get a kick out of it for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to follow that one up with
all right. What have you got for the fourth?
Yeah, I've got another Clooney film. This one moving forward in my chronology to 2010, a movie that I enjoy watching over and over. It's kind of, I don't want to say it's like a Bond film because it doesn't, there's a little bit of Bond to it, but it's just this kind of quiet film that you can pick up and just watch bits and pieces of and kind of enjoy. And it's The American with George Clooney from 2010. Yeah. And the simple description of it at IMDb is an assassin hides out in Italy for one last assignment. This is a really stylish film. It was directed by Anton Corbijn. He's a Dutch director who kind of made his name for a while as a photographer. He shot the cover for U2's The Joshua Tree album. He just has this moodiness to it, this sort of melancholy darkness, I guess, or you know, is how I'd describe it, I guess, in my mind, to his photographs and to his films. And you know, this is Clooney not being a typical Clooney. He's not witty. He's not debonair. I mean, I guess he is to a certain degree, but it's a really quiet film. I mean, there isn't a ton of dialogue in it. It's set in a very beautiful place. It's in kind of a rural part of Italy, kind of a small mountain town where he's kind of hiding out. There's obviously some romantic intrigue. There's kind of some technical part to it, you know, the sort of gear gadgety sort of aspect to it. Really kind of film noir. It almost feels like there's some elements, there's like a foot chase through the city that feels a bit like The Third Man, you know, lots of long shadows and stone staircases and echoes and that sort of thing. And there's some pretty great Omega Speedmaster sightings in this movie as well. You know, Clooney being a longtime Omega man, wears a Speedmaster and actually uses it in the film and gets a close up or two. But I really love this movie. I watched it not too long ago for maybe the second or third time. And it's really a good one.
Yeah, this is a great one for sure. I would have to go back and do some research as to why it got so ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't get me wrong, it's not like it has an incredible IMDb rating, but that never really slows me down. I'm sure I've listed movies today that have lower than a 63. Yeah. Or 6.3 out of 10. That's never really my concern with these things. I just think I would have to go back and see how, if it got heat checked by another movie in right at the same time. And it could be that this one, I think this is one of those sort of movies which maybe the trailer purports itself to be a little more action packed than the film is.
Could be. Yeah.
Because I think if you saw a little bit of the trailer or maybe or only a sample, you might think it's more in the vein of like a Ronin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it really is more in the vein of like a Third Man. I wouldn't compare the two films in many ways. I mean, some of the way that it's shot feels like a bit of a love letter, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
And there certainly is violence and action in the film, but it's much more cerebral than an action film would be.
Yeah.
It's a little bit inside its own head the whole time.
And you don't know what's great about it is you don't know who to suspect. Everybody's suspicious, I guess, is how I'd put it. You know, you don't know. Every character kind of has a look, you know, or a something about them that you're just not sure if you can trust that person. And I think that's the whole point of the movie. He doesn't trust anybody. And I love how it moves from, you know, the opening of it is set in this very cold, snowy, you know, cabin in Sweden, and then moves to this beautiful location in kind of sun-drenched Italy. And it's it's great. I think you're right. I think, you know, at the time, maybe people were expecting kind of an action kind of Clooney, you know, shoot 'em up, a bit louder movie. And I just think it was a really kind of a quiet cerebral piece that people weren't quite expecting. And that could be a bit of a letdown if you were showing up at the theater for something a little more showy. But I really love this one.
Yeah, cool. Great pick. Another good Clooney showing. Got a lot of Matt Damon, a lot of Clooney in this one. I'm okay with it. This is good. Yeah. All right. So for my next one, 4 out of 5, we're going to 2022. I just recently watched the sequel to this film, and it reminded me how much I liked the one from 2022. This is a movie called Prey. It is a film from the world of the Predator, the expanded universe of Predator, if you will.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore this movie. I've watched it a couple times. The tagline is Naru, a skilled warrior of the Comanche Nation fights to protect her tribe against one of the first highly evolved predators to land on Earth. if you've never seen a Predator film, please start with the first one. It's unbelievable. There's no movie like it. It's every meme from an action film in an action film. It's one of the most influential pieces of American cinema out there, especially to that like 1980s perspective of like action and big muscles and Schwarzenegger and all this kind of stuff. But at the same time, it's a great premise. And it's that these aliens known as Predators, and the world expands greatly beyond what's presented in the first film. But from the storyline of the first film, the aliens are, you know, they come to Earth and to conceivably to other planets to hunt for sport. And in this scenario, in the original one, the alien confronts a series of like special forces roid heads, you know, Jesse Ventura, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Bill Duke. It's every bullet that you could find in the world. These guys were carrying on them. It's a great action film. This is quite a bit different in that it's, you know, pre-American West. Huh. You know, the greatest hunter at the time would have been the Comanche Nation, and the Predator comes for one of them and has to size them up. Hmm. And the Predator has advanced technology and all these other things. This is done by Dan Trachtenberg. I think that when Dan's movies hit, they hit incredibly hard. If you haven't seen 10 Cloverfield Lane, it's unbelievable. Hmm. That's another one I absolutely could have put on today's list. One of my favorite John Goodman roles. And then he just recently did Predator Badlands, which offers another entire look at a whole different world, a whole different Predator, etc. I really liked Prey. The entire movie is done in subtitles in Comanche. Amber Midthunder, who plays the lead, the star, is absolutely amazing. This movie is patient. It is incredibly violent. It's really moody. It's really beautiful. And I think, especially if you grew up with other Predator movies, this is the one that like almost switches genres.
Hmm.
It's so good.
Wow.
I really, really like this one. It's a lot of fun. It won a primetime Emmy. It was nominated for 44 other awards. And if it matters, we're currently holding a 7.1 on IMDb. it's a really fun. And I think Trachtenberg just does a great job with it.
Oh, that's great. I was totally unfamiliar with this. I'd heard of it, but I didn't know the storyline or the era or anything like that. So I'll have to check that out. If it's one of those genres of movie that I have to kind of be in a mood for. But, you know, when I am for, sure. for kind of an action sci-fi film, this seems like a good kind of riff on that. So cool.
Yeah. And I mean, this removes a lot of the sci-fi part because it is so long ago.
Yeah.
You know, I love that it presents that storyline where the Predators have been coming to Earth for hundreds of years.
Yeah.
For their, you know, hunting rituals or whatever. It's I just think it's great. And especially if you are going to watch Badlands, you should watch this one first. Because Badlands is much more essentially down the middle action film, dialogue. It's in English. You know, presents a whole different side of the Predator nation or whatever, if you will. Yeah. But this one... for me, is the winner of the two.
Cool.
You'd probably love 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Mm, yeah, I've heard of that one too, but I've never seen it.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. That's my fourth. What have you got for your fifth and final?
All right. Yeah, this is one I'm surprised I haven't talked about before because it's a movie I recommend to people all the time. And I've got a bit of a backstory to it and how I kind of got introduced to it. But it's called Treasures from the Wreck of the Unbelievable. And this is a movie that was from 2017. And I'll read the summary. The fake story of the art found beneath the depths of the ocean from a 2,000-year-old shipwreck. Damien Hirst and the crew recount the moments various discoveries are made, the myths and legends surrounding the find. I hesitated to even read that summary because indeed it is a spoof. I don't even want to call it a spoof because it's not necessarily funny. It's a faux documentary. And the reason I hesitate to say that up front is because I almost want people to watch this and then discover that on their own, that it's actually not real. But the way I got introduced to this was I was at one of the watch trade shows. You know, it was either SIHH or Basel World. I want to say it was SIHH, but it was Ulysse Nardin. I don't know if they were at SIHH that year, but it was probably in 2017. Okay. And in their booth, they had these gorgeous coral, hard coral, kind of fossilized coral displays behind glass with some of their watches in them all around their booth. And it was a spectacularly beautiful booth. And as it turns out, this wasn't necessarily real coral. These were sculptures by the artist Damien Hirst. Now, Damien Hirst is a controversial British artist who I think people might be most familiar with him because he had encased like a great white shark carcass in formaldehyde. I think that was his most famous thing that he did, and it was controversial. He actually created this film, and he created all the art that was in this booth. And I first learned about this and kind of started reading about it, and then I saw this movie, and it was all about the discovery of these purported artifacts, these coral encrusted artifacts that were brought up from this old shipwreck. And the movie it's not a Life Aquatic, you know, Steve Zissou spoof, but it's along those lines in that it's a fake documentary about kind of along the lines of, you know, the movies we like Blue Water, White Death. You know, it's this team of marine archaeologists that are off the coast of, I can't remember where, you know, somewhere probably in the Indian Ocean, that discover this old shipwreck, and they are diving and they're bringing all this stuff up with, you know, cranes and preserving it on the deck of this ship and then bringing it back and cleaning it up, and interspersed with interviews with the crew. And then it culminates with this grand showing of the what they brought up, these artifacts, at a museum in Italy. And I believe the show in Italy was actually a real event, and the movie culminates with this. So it's kind of all revealed towards the end of the movie that it actually wasn't real, and that Hirst created all of these pieces and they weren't brought up from the bottom of the ocean. You just have to see this movie. It's really, really good. I need to watch this again. It's been, you know, probably since the year it came out, which was, you know, close to 10 years ago now. But I can't recommend this one enough. I talk about it quite a bit. And actually, the person with whom I watched it the first time, my former wife, was actually kind of annoyed to discover that it was not real. I think, you know, some people, maybe others will feel that way. You know, you kind of watch this and you're kind of drawn in by this story, and then you realize that this is not real at all. So maybe I'll be curious to see what other people's reactions are, or if anyone's seen this, I'd love to hear about it. But just a really fun, great movie.
Nice. Yeah. I don't know this movie at all. So another one from my list. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sounds cool. Sounds like a trip. Yeah. I can understand like getting to the end of a faux documentary and then finding out none of it was real and being like,
I've been duped.
Yeah. My emotions.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
I've been played.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's another good one. And I love that it's in kind of a genre that we love. It should add some context when I watch it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. My fifth and final is quite a modern film. It's on Netflix right now. I believe it just came out on the 16th of January. Mm. I watched it this past weekend and really enjoyed it. It's called The Rip. And its tagline or logline is a group of Miami cops discovers a stash of millions in cash, leading to distrust as outsiders learn about the huge seizure, making them question who they rely on.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from Joe Carnahan, who you might know from, let's see, Narc back in the day, Smokin' Aces. He's done a few fun movies. And I think that this one is very much a cast-led sort of cop drama, semi-action film. It's Matt Damon, it's Ben Affleck, Steven Yeun, who I adore, Tiana Taylor, who's having an incredible year. She is also in One Battle After Another, which is obviously going to do very well in the awards. Catalina Sandino Moreno, Sasha Calle, Kyle Chandler, Scott Adkins. It's got a good cast. It's sort of, in some ways, it really feels like it's sort of referencing a lot of 90s cop, who can you trust, who's the dirty cop, who's how are we going to get out of here. But at the same time, it has sort of the style of like a good Fuqua. Like not a Training Day, but it's definitely the sort of movie where if they couldn't have gotten maybe a Matt Damon or a Ben Affleck, or if those guys weren't interested, I believe they're producers and are getting a cut of Netflix, which is something Netflix never does, instead of just paying a rate for the film. You can fact check me on all that kind of stuff, but I believe this is the sort of movie we might have seen a Kevin Spacey, Samuel Jackson, Denzel Washington in X number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it called back to me for stuff from McTiernan, for stuff like The Negotiator, if you remember that one. It just, like, there's a lot. It's a really solid sort of cop drama, most of which happens on one street. Most of it's in one house.
Hmm.
And I really like Steven Yeun. Obviously, I'm on record. Adore Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. I wouldn't put it up there like with The Town or Training Day or something like that. But if you enjoyed Den of Thieves, which was a previous film club pick, I think this is right in line there.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm largely putting it in to stand on my soapbox. There's a thread on the Slack over the weekend from people saying like movies weren't good anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Or like had peaked in the 90s. And like, don't get me wrong, the 90s are full of great movies. Some of my favorite movies are in there, or the 70s or the 80s. Like, there's every decade has great movies. I refuse to accept that there aren't incredible movies coming out right now, especially genre films.
Yeah.
It's just like, this is not a movie that was going to go to theaters and make $180 million its first weekend. It just isn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And instead it went to Netflix and you can watch it. It's like, it's ready for you on your couch. Yeah. And I really enjoyed it. There's a couple moments of like absolute brilliance. There's a scene between Matt Damon and Steven Yeun out on the street that I think is excellent. Really well shot, really well written. I think Ben's really good in this. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit, more than I expected to. I thought it was going to be like two guys you love seeing in movies together since Good Will Hunting. And yeah, I'm pumped by this one as well. I enjoyed it. If you like a good cop action-y sort of movie, it checks all those boxes.
Yeah, and I do like that kind of movie. That's it's kind of a comfortable space, you know. It's kind of one of those coming home kind of movies. I got to check this one out. I've read a little bit about it, and it's on my list. That's a good one, and it's kind of fun to have a current movie. You know, you mentioned One Battle After Another, and I was tempted to put that on the list. And I thought, do I want to do something so current? And you did. So you know, you've set the precedent here, and I think that's good. So.
I had trouble because there's a handful of movies that I really, really liked from this year.
Mm-hmm.
One Battle After Another, Weapons, which I think I spoke about. I absolutely
Sinners.
Adore.
Oh.
Sinners was amazing.
Yeah.
And I kind of just want, let's run that in the summer once we see the Oscars and can kind of add to the heat. I think these are movies that a lot of people have seen. Maybe not Weapons. You should see Weapons if you like horror films.
Mm-hmm.
It's horror that I can handle, so it's not that scary.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really good. Like, it's a really, really good movie. If you liked Parasite, I think you'll really like Weapons.
Mm.
It's just one step scarier and one step more paranormal than Parasite. But yeah, I mean, there's been just some incredible movies this year. Sinners is just great.
Yeah.
Just great. Yeah. And yeah, One Battle, I've only watched it twice so far and really, really enjoyed it. I mean, nobody does it like Paul Thomas Anderson. So I'm sure that we'll get to those in a future film club. But that's all we've got for this one. Jason, you picked, attempting chronological order here, 1984's This Is Spinal Tap, 2006's Idiocracy, 2006's The Lives of Others, 2010's The American, and finally 2017's Treasures from the Wreck of the Unbelievable.
And your picks were from 1996, Mission Impossible, 1998's Rounders, from 2001, Ocean's 11, Prey from 2022, and The Rip.
There you go.
All right. 10 fresh ones for our list.
Yep. Let us know on the Slack what you think of our 10, what we should maybe consider for a future one. And if you have a great idea of a guest, and even if that really good idea is to have Tom on again, I would be okay with that, of course. shout out Tom if you're listening to this episode in due course. Let us know. We'd love to consider, maybe it's a two guest thing and we do, you know, 20 movies or something like that. There's been so many good ones lately. Yeah. And when you look back over the list, and now we're pushing almost 130 picks, and I still think we've left stuff off. So lots of good stuff to watch in there. Just pick something you don't know this weekend and give it a try. I think you'll be happy with it. Except maybe Pig. That was famously the one that I picked that Jason hated.
That'll stand out as the sore thumb of the long list.
I stand by it. I watched it not that long ago, like in the last 2 years, and liked it.
Well, maybe you won't like The Lives of Others. Who knows? We'll see.
It's possible. Hey, one of these days, you'll steer me wrong. We'll see.
Yeah, yeah.
How about some final notes?
Yeah, sure. I'll go first. I realized that I'd never really talked about this magazine. It comes, you know, I'm a member of the Explorers Club, and it, as part of my membership, I get this quarterly, this magazine, the Explorers Journal. But it is available to non-members as well as a annual subscription. It comes quarterly, so it's 4 issues a year, $60. And it's a really fantastic magazine. It's kind of a smaller footprint, smaller format, but you know, plenty of pages, beautiful photography, really a well-produced, great paper, great kind of embossed, textured cover to it. If you're kind of more of into the tactile element of print media, which, you know, is part of the fun. And there's just such great stories, great writing, from kind of expeditions that different Explorers Club members are doing or have done, but also just they pull from, you know, just the world of exploration. This past issue that I just got a week or so ago had some of the really high resolution imagery that was stitched together from the expedition to discover Endurance at the bottom of the Antarctic Ocean, the Weddell Sea. And it's spectacular. And the story kind of behind of how they kind of put all that together and the technology that they used is great. And there's some good interviews in there. It's really a worthwhile subscription in my mind. I think, you know, I subscribe to a few magazines and the kind of the common thread is they're just all really well produced. They're not, you know, weekly or monthlies. They tend to be kind of quarterly or, you know, biannual or something. And I just, they're the kind you can just sink into and just kind of read and put by your bed and keep and come back to. So yeah, the Explorers Journal subscription at $60 for quarterly issues per year. So yeah, that's mine.
That's a great pick. You know, we had a magazine subscription on our gift list.
Yeah.
For the end of last year. And I think Explorers Journal is a great addition to that. $60 for a magazine that you get at least a couple of a year. I mean, speaking as a guy who helps lead and kind of bring Hodinkee magazine to life, I don't think it's that much money once you know how these things are made.
Yeah.
If the paper feels okay, that's an expensive thing to put in your hand. And yeah, I think that's a fascinating thing, especially with that kind of scope of the stories.
So yeah.
Good pick.
All right.
Mine this week is actually just probably the best $30 I've spent this year so far. Sarah was asking, you know, if there was an option for our espresso machine, which is now 6 years old, to not have a portafilter, or like where the espresso actually comes out, to not have a sort of portafilter that had a bunch of plastic in it. Mm-hmm. Just trying to limit plastic, more metal. We've already left all of the non-stick stuff out of the house and that sort of thing. And I did only a bit of research. So if you're a coffee nerd, you're allowed to roll your eyes and jump to the end for the quote. That's fine. But if you're like me and I use a you know, $300 DeLonghi machine that I bought 6 years ago and I thought would die after a year or two, and then I'd buy something nice.
Yeah.
And it keeps cranking out decent coffee. Jason's had the coffee from it. It's just fine, in mm-hmm. my opinion. I'm really happy with it. You can put a good bean in it and get a good espresso out of it, and that's kind of all I want. But I was like, yeah, you know, let's look into a different option. And if there's an option that might allow me to make better coffee along the way of removing the plastic. And so I did a little bit of research, found this idea of a bottomless portafilter, which is where you can actually see the formation of the shot mm-hmm. on the underside of the portafilter.
Yeah.
And I bought one of these that fit my DeLonghi machine. The DeLonghi one was out of stock and was 4 or 5 times the price for what appeared to be the exact same thing. So I bought this, and now I've been spending a little bit more time, a little bit more care in how I prepare the shot. And the coffee is, I'm up another level. If I was at a B, obviously I'm in an A- or something like that.
Yeah.
So I've been very happy with it. So if you happen to have a kind of somewhat more basic or conventional home espresso machine, and you've been using, like the old one was 6 years old, and so that means it's done, you know, thousands and thousands of shots.
Yeah.
Through that plastic funnel thing inside the, like, under the basket.
Mm-hmm.
This is something worth considering. Jason, I assume, like, you have a proper machine, so I assume this is all kind of conventional, but it's not what comes with the DeLonghi.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. I was trying to figure out what was different about this, and yeah, you're right. I mean, this is, essentially you can adapt a more affordable machine to kind of be a little more robust and sustainable, if you will, or just more durable. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
I like that.
Yeah, tastes great.
Yeah.
So I'm super happy with it. It wasn't a fortune, which you can't say about most things that allow you to make better espresso. It is a cash-hungry hobby. and of course, I've already now started to go down the rabbit hole of, like, better tamps and distributors and these sorts of things. And who knows, maybe we'll get there. Maybe, you know, I refuse, as I think I've said previously, to stop using this machine just to buy a better one.
Yeah.
When this machine gives up the ghost, I will spend on a more thorough explanation or exploration of espresso. But until then, this made a nice difference for very little money.
Nice. Yeah. Cool pick. All right. Well, long episode, but you know, these film club ones tend to do that. And I think they're well worth the time spent. And,
and last week was a quick one, so we owed a few minutes. No big deal.
Yeah. Well, as always, thanks so much for listening. Please chime into the Slack if you have your own film picks or if you have feedback on the ones we chose. And if you want to subscribe to the show notes, get into the comments for each episode, or consider supporting the show directly and maybe even grab a new TGN signed NATO, please visit thegraynato.com. Music throughout is Siesta by Jazzar via the Free Music Archive.
And we leave you with this quote from the legendary Orson Welles, who said, "If you want a happy ending, that depends, of course, on where you stop your story."